Hey, Mrs. McGillicuddy, don't be a satellite radio snob and pass by the Mike Church Show. Come on in and browse.
May I help you?
Oh, no thanks, sir. Just browsing.
How long do you intend to browse?
Well, that lady there, you don't ask her how long she intends to browse. How come you're asking us how long we intend to browse?
You don't look like browsers.
Now that that's over...
How about a fresca?
The Mike Church Show, entertaining browsers and fans since 1992 on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
You won't.
If you pay all the bills.
Wanna bet?
Where is my John Wayne? Where is my fairy song? Where is my happy ending? Where have all the cowboys gone?
Mike Church Show here, Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel on a blooming Wednesday at 844-527-8723. Check us out at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Make it your start page. If you have not downloaded our app, another great way to spread the word about the program when you have the app in your hand on your phone and you can just show somebody, well, bam, there it is. Or click the Listen Now button and go kablowy, there it is. Check it out. The app works, I have heard, splendidly on all Android phones, splendidly on all iPhones, and splendidly on the Windows phone. So, no reason to not use the apps. They're $1.99, and all your upgrades are free. By the way, with the new service, the new content delivery network that we have, it will now be possible to incorporate shows being delivered to your smartphones via the app. There is a way to do it. It's going to take a little bit of planning on my part because I'm the app developer in order to get it implemented, but it is definitely possible. So check that out and be on the lookout. I'll let you know when the app is updated. But please, go download a copy today. There's no better way to spread the word than by actually having the app on and in your hand and listening. All right, to our man in Mordor, Jordan Bloom, who's standing by the offices of the Daily Caller.
Welcome to another episode of Bloom, Our Man in Mordor. A look at all the news that was not fit to print.
Listen to me! Print that story, you're a dead man!
It's not just me anymore. You'd have to stop every newspaper in the country now, and you're not big enough for that job. People like you have tried it before, with bullets, prison, censorship. But as long as even one newspaper will print the truth, you're finished.
Bloom, Our Man in Mordor. Conclusive proof that posted media must be stopped. Exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
And Jordan is standing by. Hey, Jordan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am well, sir, here on a bloomin' Wednesday. First thing I
heard you mention Regnery Publishing just recently, not in the most flattering of light, but I should defend them just a little bit. I generally agree that most of what they put out is garbage, but I published a piece from Brian McClanahan, who I think you know.
I do.
Brian McClanahan?
No, I do know
him.
He just
wrote a book about seven presidents who tried to ruin America, and he had a piece for us about the DAPA case, and he's pretty good. And they also just reissued James Burnham's Suicide of the West, which is so they're getting back to their roots as an actually respectable publisher.
I would love to read that. I should qualify when I say things like about Regnery Publishing like that. I guess what I mean is just the litany of books. I get two or three a week. They come across and I just read them going, this is just meant to take advantage of a cliche that was a bumper sticker 3 months ago.
Sure, they're meant to turn bloggers into Fox News personalities, I think.
Hey, speaking of, I don't know if you saw this, and I should have sent this to you, but I blogged about this last night on my site at MikeChurch.com. It's about the guy that founded the Politico.com.
Oh, yeah, Jim Vandehei.
Yeah, Jim Vandehei. And he had written about how the clickbait world was about to come to an end.
And yeah, I saw that piece. There was another similar thing that was in the packet of articles I sent you. Basically, one of the big stories in the last week or so is that a lot of these kind of legacy, especially progressive news organizations, are not doing so well. Mashable laid off a lot of people. They're not especially progressive. BuzzFeed turned out to be something like $80 million below its revenue projections. Gawker lost that huge case against Hulk Hogan. And there was another one too. Salons laid off, I think, 6 staffers in the last 2 weeks. So what's happening is, and an interesting note is, as far as I can tell, this hasn't really affected us. But there are two things going on here. There's the fact that, one, that all of these media companies are heavily dependent on Facebook and Twitter algorithms. I hear this all the time that, you know, if articles that I publish in the opinion section don't go up on Facebook, nobody reads them. A huge majority of the traffic comes from sites like that. And now, and so there are algorithms that govern what you see in your Facebook newsfeed. And if, you know, the little gremlins running behind the scenes at Facebook, when they change those algorithms, that can have a major impact on yep. news organizations very, very quickly. And for example, Vice, in the last quarter, their traffic is down 15%. And that's partly due to these algorithm changes, and it's partly due to this other practice that that Vice and others are doing these days, where they basically take a bunch of different sites, they bundle them together, and refer traffic to each other. So it's basically the traffic version of mortgage-backed securities. and so, again, when you do that and then the algorithm changes, that can cause much more dramatic effects than it might otherwise, exactly like you saw in 2008.
Well, what Vandehei wrote, I focused more in on the good news and of what he was saying. Can somebody get UPS, please? Somebody, thank you. And here's the good news, Jordan. Here's the good news. This era is getting flushed away. Some companies feel self-conscious about the trash that they are producing. Many others realize it's simply not a good business model. But the savviest ones see a very cool reason to change. A content revolution is picking up speed, promising a profitable future for companies that can lock down loyal audiences, especially those built around higher quality content. Now, we most certainly have a loyal audience here. It's not very big, but it is most certainly loyal. So I took heart in that. Then I read this. I don't know if you know this guy. It's Andrew Singer, who is the bigwig or a CEO or editor or whatever of Broadway Television. He wrote this. Here is my hope. If we do land, and I just was browsing around last night. That's how I found this. If we do the hard work of identifying and developing relationships with the stars of tomorrow and put them together in the right combinations, on the right projects, at the right platforms, content creators will earn the leverage Bill Gates anticipated we'd have all those years ago. It's a simple enough mission, though just about impossible to execute perfectly. Each show is like its own startup company, with an inherent tendency to fall apart and with everything in a constant state of change. But that's my admittedly challenging goal for 2016. Take the time and really put a good show together. The standard of writing, directing, and performance shouldn't be based upon what we can sell, because in this market, producers can sell almost anything, but in what we would want to watch for years to come. If we've done our jobs, we'll end up with real leverage, and even more importantly, a real show. That guy makes a lot of sense, don't you think?
No, absolutely. And there is, I guess, maybe an upside to some of this is that the majority of these organizations that are failing because they've lost credibility. That's certainly the case with Salon. And also you see this in right-wing talk radio, a subject you know a lot about. We talked about this last time, about how listeners are revolting, that you know, they're perceived to be anti-Trump, or they're never Trumpers, but their audiences aren't. So they're that's another thing. I think it's also true that these little niche media companies are able to kind of carve out a place for themselves. Politico itself, though, is definitely one of those, and that doesn't necessarily make them independent. They have some of the – basically Politico's business model, most of their revenue comes from the very high-cost Politico Pro, which is for people that work in particular sub-genres of policy, either transportation or defense or what have you. And to subscribe to these niche articles is very, very costly, and virtually nobody else is interested in subscribing to that. I would never subscribe to Politico Pro Defense, even if I find, you know, Pentagon spending interesting. It's just too costly. But so the advertisers, so if you've got that sort of business model, what kind of advertiser is interested in advertising to people who read Politico Pro Defense? Well, defense contractors, obviously. And so it becomes easily compromised, I think.
Can I ask you a question then? What, isn't Jane's Defense like the big swinging you-know-what on the block, and aren't they still king?
Yeah, that's probably the case between them and, you know, there's Rand. There are a few of these companies that do more or less the same stuff. But Politico Pro, it's a little bit different than Jane's. They don't try to be comprehensive, but they do try to cover policy news in a deeper way than you'd get even in Reuters or the Associated Press.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. Some of the interesting articles that Jordan has sent me today, one of them is from the Front Porch Republic, and we are fellow front porchers, I think. I know I was just thinking out loud the other day, you know what I'm going to do? Someday soon, I'm going to leave suburban developed cul-de-sac life, and I'm going to find me a acreage spread somewhere where I'm going to give you a line from a national car rental commercial. I don't have to talk to any humans if I don't want to.
Well, you could talk to Ken Bickford about that. He's building that that planned new urbanist community just north of New Orleans.
Is he? I have not read about this.
I tried to connect you two.
Well, you know, I think, okay, that was back in the old station in the old country. I did talk to him, but I've not heard anything else about this.
I don't know exactly how quickly it's moving along, but it definitely is a dream of his.
Now, let's start with this. Last night, obviously, was a big day, as was anticipated for Donald Trump. It was, as anticipated, a rotten day for Ted Ineligible Cruz. And I guess it was a great day for John Kasich because he actually got three delegates. Woo hoo hoo hoo. Now, I was telling the audience earlier today that I cannot logically reason. My logic will not allow me to reason any other way or any other reason why Cruz and Kasich are hanging around, other than the GOP has something nefarious up its sleeve, and they still need live, warm, campaigning bodies on the scene of the crime to make it happen. What do you think?
That's still kind of an open question, I guess. The thing that everybody fears is that the Republican establishment will try to rip the nomination away from Trump. I actually think the establishment is wilier and more compromising than I think we're even considering, because there's some evidence that they're starting to warm up to Trump. For example, Patrick Howley, reporter for Breitbart, uncovered that a D.C. delegate was not actually a D.C. resident, so ineligible to be a D.C. delegate. And so he basically called the Republican Party, and they said they'd get on it and have her removed. So the Republican Party is sort of starting to take the criticisms of the pro-Trump people seriously. And so that would be one piece of evidence that would indicate that maybe they aren't as against Trump as the people who are diehard Ted Cruz supporters. I think that really is an important thing to note, that your Eric Erickson's, your Liz Mayer's, your Dana Loesch's, these sort of lifelong conservatives, they hate Trump more than the Republican establishment does.
Now, see, I don't get that. I have some disagreements with Donald Trump. I am not a Trump booster. I've already announced I'm not voting this year. So don't call me and ask, who did you vote for? You didn't do your... I've done decades of civic duty. I ain't doing civic duty this year. It doesn't matter if I vote. Anyways, having said that, I really do not understand the diatribes that are hurled Trump's way. Trump is no more... he is no more hysterical in the things than he says than Ted Cruz is hysterical in a ridiculous statement like, well, I'm going to go away. If I'm elected president, we're going to find out whether or not sand glows in the dark. That's as hysterical and as outrageous a statement as I believe is humanly possible, threatening to turn an entire desert, alleged sandy area, threatening to detonate a nuclear bomb on it, or even intimating that that's some kind of like a walk in the park or a fantasy for people. So I think what it is that they have, the Dana Lashes especially of the world, are so inured to the idea that American politics and the American political system is the most pristine creation in the history of man when it comes to political entities. And therefore, it is only possible, then it has to be possible, nay, probable, that just the right guy or gal is going to come along and is going to fix it for them. So it's going to work the way little Jimmy Madison fantasized, or the way that Thomas Jefferson or James Wilson or Ben Franklin fantasized. And we're just one fantasy away from political nirvana. So they're the ones that are clinging to something that is not real, has not manifested itself as real ever in history, and that includes the first Congress, from the first Congress till today. It's the Trumpites, the Trumpistas, the Trumpzilla supporters, Jordan, it seems to me, that are actually starting to confirm their mind to the reality that politics is so corrupt, it may take a heavy-handed, assertive guy like Trump to actually get anything done today. What do you think?
Sure. What's that Talleyrand quote? It's worse than a crime. It's a mistake. That's what I don't think people get about Cruz, is that Michael Daugherty's exactly right. When the American people get an up or down vote on conservatism as an ideology, it loses. And so Ted Cruz fails the Buckley rule test. The Buckley rule is you support the most electable conservative. Ted Cruz can't win in a general election. So these kind of never Trumpers, these pro Cruz people, they don't understand that. What I think it is really more than anything, maybe they do understand it and they just don't care. They're willing to die on that hill. But I think more than that, they're willing to die on that hill because they see their movement is so important and it's so integral to the livelihoods of some of these people.
Wow.
Like Loesch and right. Eric Erickson and the rest. So they're willing to let the entire conservative movement founder on a losing candidate, as long as they keep their little gravy train going, and as long as they don't have to support someone who's, you know, admittedly ideologically compromised. Trump is a pragmatist. He doesn't really believe anything.
Well, if we were quoting lines from the Big Lebowski, then we would say, yeah, we are nihilists. We believe in not seeing Lebowski. We believe in not seeing Trump.
Right.
You would just describe a nihilist if he believes in nothing. Or nihilism is a belief that nothing matters, I think, is more appropriate. But I think you just said something that is profound, Jordan. And that is that this ideological move, this movement and this system, their livelihood is tied to it. And I believe that that's what the Trump voter has discovered. Now, there are some entities. For example, there's not a day that goes by someone doesn't tweet me, Facebook me, or email me about what they call my replacement on Sirius XM. They call it Trump Bart now. Right, Bart, show me the tank for Trump, this and then Trump, this and Trump, that. Look, I don't listen, so I don't know, and I don't really have an opinion on it. I don't really care. But I do know that people are saying that Breitbart has gone all in for Trump. I read news from Breitbart from time to time. I've not rendered an opinion on that. But that is then an entity that is swimming in the same waters as Leish and Erickson and Limbaugh and Hannity and all the rest of them that has actually taken Trump under their wing. So what's going on there?
Yeah, I'll actually defend them on this a little bit. And I'm no fan of the Steve Bannon Vanity Show. But I think they are smart. The entire Breitbart business model is to zag where others are zigging. And the Daily Caller does the same thing. They understand that when your Ericssons, your Mark Levins are bashing Trump, there's a huge, huge what does Bannon call it? He's actually used this phrase a couple of times on air, the phrase populist nationalist movement. They started using that. In fact, Bannon first used it in an interview about taking over that SiriusXM show a couple of months ago, and they've used it on air since. So has Laura Ingraham. So this is another thing I think is interesting.
What is the quote again? I want to write this down.
Are words that these conservative radio personalities are okay with. And also, I mean, I think Breitbart gets more than anyone else, and they're less scrupulous, I think, than you know, maybe Levin or something. And they understand that these millions of people aren't being spoken for, so they're going to do it because there's a big audience there. And I think that's basically smart. Whether they're Trumpart, I mean, does it make them pro-Trump that they're debunking? They're doing the same thing they've always been doing, right? Which is debunking mainstream media narratives. That was Andrew Breitbart's MO. And this whole thing, you know, I can't say too much about this whole Michelle Fields thing because I know virtually everyone who's related to the story. And the whole thing just seems like a real embarrassment to the D.C. press corps. But Breitbart, you know, was criticized a lot for, I guess it was assumed that they weren't sticking up for their reporter. Now this prosecution against Corey Lewandowski has completely been thrown out, and they're talking about bringing a civil case. Breitbart basically has always been about puncturing this sort of self-importance and BS, for lack of a better term.
Wow.
So I don't see this whole pro-Trump thing as entirely out of character for Breitbart, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Now, what was the quote that you said that they live by at the beginning? I wanted to write it down. You said they're all operating under this principle, and that includes Breitbart, and you even mentioned Dana Loesch.
Oh, I just mean...
You said Laura Ingraham. You said Laura Ingraham.
Oh, yeah. Populist nationalist movement. That's a little phrase they've used numerous times since then.
Populist nationalist movement.
Yeah, you can Google it. You can find a couple different instances.
I just wrote it down. 844-527-8723. It's the Mike Church Show here on Veritas Radio Network Crusade Channel. No, we're not done yet. We're still on. We're still talking. Jordan Bloom from the Daily Caller and from the Mitreus is my guest. And he's here every other Wednesday. Tell me now, let's just switch gears for just a moment here to something that may or may not tickle the fancy of the audience. I think this is huge. And I also think that this has to be an act of desperation. So the story you sent me is German and Dutch military forces are merging, which could bring about the lust love child of the corruptocrat international bankers in the EU to bring about an EU army. Now, most people are going to look at that headline, and they're not going to get why that is a huge story and why that is dangerous. You want to explain it to them?
Yeah, sure. I don't know too much about it. I just thought it was very interesting that a number of Dutch army units have been put under control of the German army, I guess with this being the first sort of set of steps toward an EU-wide army. And that sounds... That sounds like a creature out of Alex Jones' nightmares, for
doesn't
real.
It? Doesn't it? Well, here's what I say. Here's what I would say is dangerous. This sounds to me, and I bet it will sound to many other people as that news gets out and gets around, this sounds to me as though the EU is aware, quite acutely aware, that the UK is probably going to bolt. As a matter of fact, if the UK knows what's good for it, it probably has to bolt. What may follow is Hungary and a few other countries that are going Christian in their constitutions and in their makeup are probably going to bolt as well. What seems to me what is happening here is a realignment of those peoples that might have sort of kind of agreed around on policy and on the way that things ought to be in Europe at the end of the monarchy of Kaiser Wilhelm, at the beginning of the German National Socialist Party, and then another opportunity is arising yet for yet another strong-arm entity to rear its ugly head. And look, the Brits are, and look what happens again. The Brits wind up being isolated. Why? Because the Brits, even though they're Anglican, have retained more of their former Catholicism and more of their attachment to ancient tradition and ancient and an ancient moral code and an ancient method of conduct or mode of conduct than their other European counterparts have. And look,
yeah, maybe it's also possible that the British people just understand that it's the EU is a bad deal for them.
It is.
You know, these are the maybe it's not their Catholic roots, but maybe it's their Anglo-Dutch mercantile values.
Well, I would say their Catholic roots are their Christian roots as well. You know, they sure. haven't totally bailed on. My point is that they're probably of other than Spain and Italy. And the aforementioned Poland and Hungary, they're probably of the large EU countries, the country that has retained the most of it. There's some residual grace there, as I guess is the point. I mean, why does...
Well, speaking of secessions, one of the other stories I sent you was this New York Times piece. It follows on the thing we talked about last week about those Democrats in St. Louis that wanted to become their own state. And the New York Times this week, I guess it was in Saturday's paper, came out with this article about how this is happening all across the South in Durham, North Carolina, Jackson, Mississippi, Dallas. These sort of liberal urban cores are wanting more self-determination from their wicked conservative states. And I thought about writing, you know, a sort of a quasi-satire piece about, you know, two Republican politicians just with making the point, let them go. You'll be making the same argument soon enough, and you need to show magnanimity. You know, a case for Republican politicians to let liberal cities secede.
844-527-8723. The story that I had from the New York Times was the redoing of the entire map. Is that the one you're referring to?
No, the title of it was Southern Cities Move Past States on Liberal Social Issues, which is an amusingly New York Timesy headline.
Well, you know that, you know, I didn't get to that one in your rundown, but I will. That's on tomorrow's docket now. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
But I will tell you this, I have been babbling on endlessly here about the formation of the Republic of St. Tammany, which is to be claimed as a Catholic county or a Catholic republic, and we're going to fly the flag of the Carillon de Sacre, Carillon de Cor, the Sacre Cor. That's the flag of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's a really cool flag too. And my contention has been the exact same: that why should we be strangled and held in check by the rest of the state of Louisiana, when we have a population that is as large as Liechtenstein, as large as Monaco, a beautiful landmass. We have access to the Gulf of Mexico. We have access to all the land that leads to the Gulf of Mexico. What's holding us back? What do we need to be in cahoots with anyone else for? So I really look forward to reading that. We actually have a phone call here. Go to the telephones. This is Don in Florida on a Bloomin' Wednesday with Mike Church and Jordan Bloom. Don, you're on the Crusade Channel. How are you doing?
Good, Mike. Mike and Jordan, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to chime in just on what you were talking about in regards to the election. I've had a kind of a running thesis in my head about what this election represents for our country. I, too, don't have a dog in the race. I once Rand Paul was out, I was out. And I, to be honest, I've been out on the United States of America since November of 2012, and that's when I realized that this thing was all done. There was no hope for this country. I had nothing to do with Mitt Romney, but more to do with the re-election of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And my thesis is that each of the remaining candidates in the race each represent a different tenet of the various maladies, sicknesses, great sins that are plaguing our country right now. Trump, obviously, his hubris, his shallowness of ideas. Having come from New York, I have met 1,000 Donald Trumps in my life. They have no understanding of the Constitution, no understanding of real in-depth policy. They are simply, to be honest, loudmouths, like to bully people, and again, have a great deal of arrogance. I just have been laughing, having lived in New York for over 25 years, at this battle over New York values. I left New York because I didn't share those values, and I've been begging my family and friends that are still up there to do the same. Ted Cruz, with his apostasy, his father being an apostate Catholic, leaving his faith at an early age, never to return, never to plunge the intellectual depths of his faith, but rather to make a living being a preacher. John Kasich, to me, is one of the more astounding characters in this whole race. He's just, again, shares the hubris of Donald Trump, but in a different way, a very just devious hubris, I want to say. Tries to play that faux populist approach, deceives a lot of people into thinking that he's a good guy. Having worked in public policy and still working in public policy, I have friends in Ohio that know all the truth about John Kasich and how he operates, how he treats people, how he treats people who believe in limited government in their state. And then obviously Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton is, other than maybe Barack Obama, you couldn't find a better representation of what the United States looks like. Adamantly pro-abortion, completely ambitious, without faith.
Wait a minute, they're not just adamantly pro-abortion. These people are pro-eugenics.
Oh, yeah.
They're true heirs of Margaret Sanger. We can build a better population and let Mrs. Clinton and her buddies be the ones that get to choose who lives and who doesn't.
Exactly. And then Bernie Sanders, the lazy, want the government to take care of me mentality, the playing on the fears of individuals, playing on class warfare and on the differences between sexes and where we are in different statuses in society. All five of them represent the various maladies that afflict this country in different ways. And that's why, for me, I checked out of the race a long time ago. I just have no interest. I'm focused here on Florida, and I'm making my state better in any way that I can and in my local community. And I try to spread the message whenever I can about your show, Mike, and about to be honest, a movement of trying to reclaim your local community for your family and for your faith. And that's all that matters at this point.
Well, I think that's a great that's the greatest activity you could be involved in. It sounds great to me. Don, thank you very much for the phone call. Jordan, this would seem to be an election that's coming up with that where a candidate, if he could get on the ballot whose name was none of the above, might actually be able to get a majority.
Yeah, perhaps so. I think Trump wins, though, if it's Trump versus Hillary. And as I've said before, the exciting thing about that possibility...
Can I stop you right there? Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
Okay, so you're the only part... This is why you and I guess we have twisted brains that are wired the same way. You're the only person that I know that says that other than me. I have neighbors. They say, well, Trump's going to get crushed by Hillary. I said, name the southern state Hillary can carry. Name it. Give it to me. Which one? Well, right. It's not saying, I said,
Virginia's probably the only one.
Virginia, maybe. And I said, if Trump has half a brain, and he does, he puts Kasich on the ticket and he takes Ohio from her. Game over. Game over.
And the exciting thing about that to me is that, every election of my lifetime has been a matter of persuading these marginal, fiscally conservative, socially moderate types in places like Colorado, Virginia, and Ohio.
Right.
This is the first election that would not be like that, because Trump can win states like Michigan that have large numbers of disaffected post-industrial people. So the election becomes a referendum on trade and foreign policy, and Trump has the better end of that argument. And even if, I mean, if Hillary tries to pull the war on women stuff, Trump just responds with all the women.
He just brings
Hillary
up
is retaliated against who accused her husband of sexual assault. He has her kind of boxed in that argument. So I think that possibility is a lot stronger than you might think. He, as almost inconceivable as it is to think of Trump as a president.
Well, it is conceivable. If you could conceive of Herbert Hoover being president, then you ought to be able to conceive of Trump. You just have to pray it doesn't turn out as bad for Trump as it turned out for Hoover. Or turn out as bad for America as it turned out for America under Hoover, I should say. But there is some precedent to that before the political class, because Hoover was not really a politico. He was kind of one of those guys that was hanging around. But he never really pursued a lifelong career in politics. He was kind of content to just be one of those guys who's going, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you do this? In any event, that's about all the time that we have here for today. Some great stories in your pile of prep. I'm going to add them to mine, and we'll put that up on the site at MikeChurch.com.
Yeah, what? Post the Just War Doctrine one, too. We didn't get to that, but it's a good article by Mark Mason, whose Twitter handle is Sed Libera. Yeah, it's a great piece about the whole it was called the Pax Christi Conference in Rome, about whether Just War Doctrine needs an update. And Mark's piece was basically making the point that, no, it doesn't need an update. It just needs to be followed.
You know, that's exactly right. And as a matter of fact, earlier today, I had on Dr. Donald Prudlow, who's been writing at Those Catholic Men in a six-part series about just war. And that's pretty much the conclusion that he came to, too, that there's nothing wrong with the theory. What the problem with the theory is, it's not being used.
Right.
or what? Jordan, what was it that Chesterton said? That the just war theory has not been found, the Christian just war theory has not been found lacking, but rather Christians have been found lacking in using the just war theory?
That would be an update, but I'm sure you'd agree with the sentiments.
Yeah. So how's the podcast coming? I always ask you for an update on the great story of the history of Jamestown.
I've kind of put it aside. It's been slow going. I've just been busy with other things. I've been buying more books. I got a catalog of all colonial buildings left standing in Virginia. It's just called the Virginia Catalog, and I've been making furious lists of sites I need to visit.
I'll give you a clue. If you're looking for things that you're having a difficult time making or finding, back in the day, in the early probably the first or second decade of the 19th century, all the way through the end, a company began publishing what they called this book for various different catalog purposes. Books, buildings, for example. And the series was called the Bibliotheca. Bibliotheca, the Bibliotheca. Look up the Bibliotheca of buildings, and you might be surprised to find a 1850 contemporary account of what buildings were considered historical or had been purchased or traded during the preceding decade in Richmond, Virginia, for example.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly find it for books. The Bibliotheca has a listing of every book ever published about George Washington all the way up until 1868. When I was doing Life of Washington, that's how I found a lot of my research was done, using the Bibliotheca, because I could cross-reference whether or not somebody had republished an earlier book or had done their own. So that's how I was able to. Yeah, because I made a list of all the books ever published about George Washington. That's part of the index in Life of Washington, Volume 1. Anyways, it's always great to hear from you, brother. Great conversation, and thank you for everything and for all you do. We'll talk again real soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
You too. Folks, it's all the time we have here today. I made several speeches today and several entreaties for you to please go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com, VeritasRadioNetwork.com, and consider purchasing a Founders Pass membership today, donating to our crowdfunding effort, signing up for a monthly donation, becoming an affiliate, which means you may have a website. You can use our banner ads. We've already made them for you. You get your own link. Anybody clicks the link and buys a membership. You know, you could send people to VeritasRadioNetwork.com today. I have an email from a gentleman going like, I can't find my media files. You stole them. So no, Christopher, young Christopher, is just we're putting them under posts now. They're not in the media player any longer. They're actually on the site, and they're a lot easier to find and a lot easier to listen to. So if you're looking for files, here's your notice. As of yesterday, the 18th, all show files are on the front page at Veritas Radio Network or on any page. Use the menu where it says Crusade Shows, and then pull down your favorite show, and then you'll find a list. And all the files are in that list. Now, old archive files are still in the Founders Pass media player until we get everything moved over. But it is a brave new world for a brave new radio station. Please consider supporting us today. Do not touch your dial. Brand new episode of the True Money Show live right from this studio with David Simpson is but 40 minutes away. And then after that, part two of Dr. Michael George's two-part series on freedom. Oh, God, I'm not looking at it. I'm going to forget. Anyways, part one of two. Part one was last week. And it's about the gentleman who lived in East Germany and who escaped communism. It's a great story, and you're going to want to hear the concluding part today. So that's from noon Central to 2 Central right here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade channel. And then at 3, this show rebroadcast. And then at 8 tonight was a rebroadcast, the Mark Kreslin Show. There's a brand new episode of Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie. That's tonight at 7 Central. You're not going to want to miss that. And we have a Philosophia Perennis chat room and classroom tonight at 6. All that is today. Wednesday's a big day for us here on the Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade channel. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for your phone calls, your emails, and for your support. Folks, the May the 11th drop dead date is a real date. There are real things at stake. I hope you will consider, if you haven't already done so, becoming a sponsor, an advertiser, a banner ad advertiser, an affiliate, a Founders Pass member, a Crusade Founders Pass member, a donator, you name it. Or just pray to St. Joseph for us, and thank you very much. For young Christopher, Maggie O'Connell, and all of us here on the Crusade Channel, it's Mike Church saying, may God bless you and Mary keep you.